Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
O.J. Simpson died in Las Vegas on Wednesday, arguably as one of our most controversial local celebrities. It was really the, you know, specter of that 1995 murder trial and his 2008 conviction for armed robbery at Palace Station right here in Las Vegas that trailed after him. So today on CityCast Las Vegas, I sit down with co-host David Figler, who's also a lawyer, because David was there in 2008 as an expert correspondent for Court TV at O.J. Simpson's armed robbery trial. And we're going to talk about O.J.'s complicated Las Vegas legacy. It's Monday, April 15th. I'm Sonia Cho Swanson, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about. All right, David, I know that you, like many other Las Vegas locals, have spotted O.J. in the wild. Where have you seen O.J. Simpson out and about in Las Vegas?
You know, I don't pay too much attention, but I do have a recollection of seeing him in passing. I might have seen him in a casino from across the floor or something like that. But I do recall seeing him specifically. I mean, he was pretty everywhere after his release from prison in 2017.
So he ended up staying in Las Vegas after that, right?
Yeah, he did. A lot of people thought he was going to go back to his home state of Florida. But I mean, he had been out of circulation for 7 years in a Nevada prison up in northern Nevada, in a place called Lovelock. I think his kind of old life had fallen behind. He was a frequent visitor to Las Vegas. He was on parole. So it would have been a little complicated for him to change states. Not impossible. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think he just decided Vegas was a decent place for him. And he was treated well here out in the community by most measures. I mean, some people still felt that, you know, he had gotten away with murder and deserved to be publicly harassed. But a lot of people took the opposite and did selfies and high fives and all that stuff.
And of course, O.J. is famous for being a star football player, later showing up in a bunch of, like, you know, entertainment movies, TV, et cetera, commercials, right? He gained a lot of fame and a lot of wealth before he fell into notoriety.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we back up for just a second in case there are any listeners who aren't familiar with O.J. Simpson, or maybe they're just a little younger and weren't alive during the 1995 super notorious murder trial. Maybe we give them a super quick rundown of the timeline. So 1995 is the big trial, and that's in L.A.
So really quickly, very much a part of pop culture. He was accused of killing his ex-wife and a gentleman who was over at her house. There was a very dramatic and publicized slow car chase in his white Ford Bronco driven by someone else before police were able to stop him. Ultimately, he went to trial. It was a huge media thing, and a jury of mostly people of color acquitted him of the murder. And then he was hounded for years by the families of the people who had been murdered financially. Mm-hmm. And that actually plays into what happened in Las Vegas.
Okay, so let's speed up. Fast forward, he's acquitted. He moves to Florida. What happens in 2007?
So in 2007, he was out in Las Vegas purportedly to go to a friend's wedding. And he had gotten information that there were some folks who were selling old O.J. Simpson memorabilia, like stuff that belonged to him at one point that somehow made it into the public marketplace. You know, he was having all sorts of financial struggles at that time based on the fact that the families of the deceased people he was accused of murdering had secured a huge judgment against him, and they were always attaching his money wherever he went. Presumably, he found this to be an opportunity to reclaim some of his valuable memorabilia, sports memorabilia, some of which was particularly notorious. So he went with a group of his colleagues or friends or acquaintances over to the Palace Station where these brokers, sports brokers, were hanging out. They all kind of went into the room. At least one person had a gun, and they demanded that the sports memorabilia belonging to O.J. Simpson at some point be returned to O.J. Simpson, and they left with it. Now, nobody was physically injured. Nobody was shot. Nobody was hit. It was probably pretty scary. There were some audio tapes that later emerged of the transactions between the people. It did seem like it was a little tense, but also not particularly violent. And then they reported it to the police, and that started the entire, what I will call the media circus that descended upon the Las Vegas courthouse.
And you were there, David. You were there.
And I was there.
So what do you remember about the furor surrounding the, it was a 2008 trial, if I remember correctly, right?
With the, correct. It took a year to get to trial, which is not uncommon. It was very unprecedented. I mean, especially for a crime where nobody was injured. I mean, murder cases sometimes get like big attention or something of that nature. This was unusual. Tents were being set up in the parking lots. Trucks had arrived from media outlets as far away as one can get from Las Vegas. There were people from Australia and people from Europe. Everybody wanted to cover this story, even though at its core, it was kind of not that interesting. You know, a bunch of guys go into a room, act all tough. Maybe one of them has a gun and then they leave. But, you know, the trial went on for quite a while. And every day I was out there along with other media, you know, wearing at the time my sweater vest, which was like my look. Also glad that that's been abandoned. But
we have video evidence of this sweater vest.
We do have video evidence of a lot of sweaters with suits. So, yeah, I was engaged by Court TV and some other media outlets also to talk to me about like my thoughts as it was transpiring. And my thoughts were plentiful. As you can imagine, Sonia Cho Swanson.
Okay, I want to hear what some of these thoughts were. If you could, I'm sure you had many, many thoughts, but if you could sum up some of them for us, what was your take on the trial?
Well, I thought that he was overcharged. I thought that because of his notoriety and perhaps even because of the acquittal of the murder charges back in 1995, that this was really being framed as a payback trial.
Oh.
And while, you know, no one would ever admit to that, in fact, people were involved in the case were very quick to say this has nothing to do with that.
Sure.
I do feel that the way that the charges were presented, it being kidnapping and armed robbery, while all those could be charged in a case like this, I mean, you got to remember, O.J. Simpson had no real prior criminal conduct in his life. He had been acquitted.
Technically right.
Correct. And so, you know, I think other people would have been treated differently. And then as the trial proceeded, it was just a perfect storm for O.J. Simpson. From my position related to this Palace Station caper, never really getting a fair trial and not really having a chance to walk away from it with, you know, the more appropriate charge of what actually did transpire.
But justice is blind, David. Come on.
Justice is blind, but there were a lot of issues on appeal. Now, he didn't prevail on any of them, but a lot of court watchers, legal analysts, myself included, really felt that, you know, because of who he was and because the way that the system was, especially back then, they didn't have a lot of chance on some of those issues. I mean, a lot of them related to the way that the judge treated the defense attorneys, how the judge presided over the case, how the jury was selected. You know, if you recall...
Well, give us an example of that, because, I mean, I heard a report that the jury was all white.
It was all white. And the prosecutors had removed the only black people who were in the potential jury pool. Now, years later, we've seen from this Clark County District Attorney's Office a pattern of conduct of taking black people off of juries when black people were defendants. They have gotten in trouble for it. It has been widely reported, and a lot of cases have been reversed because of that, but that didn't happen in this particular case. I thought there were other issues as well, especially in the way that the judge was limiting the way that the defense attorneys were allowed to cross-examine the witnesses and was really berating the defense attorneys, some deserved, some not deserved, in front of the jury, making them all look bad.
Okay, so the jury finds him guilty. What's his sentence?
He and his co-defendant, the last person who was standing, because the other co-defense, the other gentleman who went into the room with him, had all taken a deal and got various sentences, pretty light. He wound up getting a sentence of 9 to 33 years in prison. And he actually did 9 years in prison before he was released.
Is that standard for these charges?
I have two schools of thought on that. One, Okay. Yes. I mean, for an actual robbery and actual kidnappings, you know, where there's maybe a little bit more specter of violence involved, these are totally in line with the normal sentences that people will get. In a case where nobody was injured, where, you know, he was operating under the assumption that this was his stuff and that he could be a little aggressive in getting it back, et cetera. I mean, not to excuse the conduct, but to certainly contextualize it, that was really high as a sentence. And the judge actually, like, without anyone asking, you're saying, and this has nothing to do with the fact that you got off of the murder case.
Wow.
So it's like, is that on your mind?
He thinks thou dost protest too much?
Well, you know, I think the judge knew that that criticism would come. And so it was sort of a preemptive proclamation.
Gotcha. But then by making the statement, it was immediately on everyone's minds.
Well, I mean, it had always been on everyone's mind.
Right. So he serves out his sentence. He ends up staying in Las Vegas, as you said, because of the, you know, parole situation.
Yeah. And we're a friendly place. We give people second, third, fourth, fifth chances
well,
here.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about is because, you know, what does Las Vegas mean to celebrities who maybe need second chances or maybe like a haven or kind of a place to hunker down? We see that with other celebrities, too, who kind of seem to be escaping the Los Angeles spotlight, right? Nick Cage and maybe Celine Dion.
Although they haven't been accused of murder, to my knowledge.
No, yes. Maybe different scenario right there.
Yeah.
That would be the murder trial of a century right there. But yeah, what does Las Vegas mean to people, you know, to celebrities who, you know, maybe don't love the spotlight?
Well, I think OJ loved the spotlight. He just liked the particular hue that Las Vegas shined upon him.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think that does send a precedent because, look, he was never shy about being out. You would see him at Grape Street or you would see him at, you know, Angel Park Golf Course or Moondoggies. Rooting on for the Bills. Yeah, because that's a Bills bar. And he was a former player for the Buffalo Bills, famously. And so, you know, here's the thing. He liked it. And I felt, and in all likelihood, he probably felt this is the least judgmental place on earth. And maybe he's right. And maybe it does set a precedent for other people who maybe are maligned or fearful of the public eye in other places can do okay here, find a life, find a groove in Vegas. That's the new LVCVA motto, right? Find your groove. But, you know, it wasn't without people, you know, flipping him off or yelling murderer at him and things of that nature, which, you know, look, this is America. People are fascinated with murder cases without celebrities involved. And people have very different views of what the justice system is. You know, some people respect a verdict. Some people seek vengeance and feel that if a person, quote unquote, gets away with murder, that there have been no consequences and the world's upside down. And I don't necessarily think that's true either. There were consequences for him. And certainly our armed robbery trial was one of them.
Right. I like what you said about Las Vegas as a place of second, third, and fourth chances. You know, I think there's something really beautiful about that. Maybe something a little dark about that, too.
Mm.
People can really come here and escape the past for better or worse.
Well, something very dark about O.J. Simpson's past, right? So it all comes in line. But, you know, it's really interesting looking back. I mean, it's one of those cases, just like the one that happened in L.A., where people got a degree of notoriety just for being connected to the case. I mean, no one more than the judge of the case.
What happened there with the judge?
Well, the judge was pretty low-key. Nobody was really talking about Judge Jackie Glass. Little was known about her at the time. Her husband is a gentleman named Steve Wolfson, who is now the district attorney. At one point, I think there was a crossover. He wasn't the district attorney, I don't think, quite yet, but shortly thereafter, he becomes district attorney. She's a sitting judge. They were both elevated in prominence, even though Steve Olson had been a city councilman prior to that. But he was just a defense attorney and Judge Glass worked for him. But she was very animated on the bench. And since these proceedings were televised in a lot of different spots, you know, she was getting compared to people like Judge Judy and stuff like that. And whether that's fair or not, she definitely brought that to the bench, I could say from personal experience, having appeared in front of her, that was kind of who she was, very little filtering. And that really blew up on a national stage. And she kind of took advantage of it. Not only her, but like her daughter's a stand-up comedian, Rachel Wilson, who's appeared in like the latest Jackass movie. And one of her more famous bits is about how her mom was the one who put OJ in prison and stuff.
Wow.
So very interesting legacy on that side as well.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Sort of a career maker all around. Well, let's just wrap on this question. What do you think OJ meant for Las Vegas?
It goes back to that very complicated nature of what Las Vegas is all about. That we can accept someone with a sordid past is probably the biggest legacy of it all. I think also the fact that it happened in Las Vegas, of all places, the crime that, you know, he was sent to prison for, just adds to that strange allure of our city that anything can happen and might. This was really a nothing burger of a quote-unquote crime. The victims of the crime didn't even testify at the sentencing, which is very unusual for this type of circumstance. I think they really didn't care one way or another. But, you know, the man did do a lot of prison time, which is kind of the other side of Nevada, is that we still have very harsh carceral rules when it comes to misbehavior. And so the old adage, which I will not repeat here, Sonia Cho Swanson, that gets overused all the time about certain things happening in a certain place and not going in a certain place or something along those lines.
What are you talking about? I don't even know what you're talking about, David.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're not going to say what it is, but, you know, on one hand, he did wind up staying here until his passing last week. But his conduct wasn't necessarily a secret, and it did go out to the world. And so Vegas cast in the world's eyes again in oh so many different ways.
So true. Well, that is the end of quite an era. David, thanks so much for this fascinating conversation.
Yeah, thanks for taking me down memory lane.
That's all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. If you enjoyed the show, go tell a friend. Tell a few friends. Then leave us a review and subscribe to our brilliant morning newsletter. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Take care, y'all.